struggling, juggling drugs that I've been covering. I recover, then find another when mother went in the sky, been hovering. Times of trouble, and I know I need myself a nice scene. I've beaten a dead horse, me, myself, and Irene. I see myself and I so much of shit in my pants. I put it inside of a rifle clip. The psycho kid in class, liable to flip and spaz. Two rifles in his hands. Eyes are clear, dry, already cried today. Might as well give up, already tried today. I inhale, give up already night and day. And hey, if I died today, forever be right away.
Irish roots and his blonde hair, and he sounds like a Chicago super fan. A music nerd with a collection of CDs from here to there. Yes, Andy Dare is in Chicago, interviewing and barbecuing. It's the
Hey everybody, welcome to the Andy Dare Show. I'm your host, Andy, and today we have episode 173. As I've been doing this season, we have been revisiting some of our past guests all the way back from the first season that we did it in 2011. And this is Copyright, and he is an influential rapper in my life. I've been listening since probably the year 2000. And yeah, I've watched his career grow, and his lyricism is still on point. He's a great ear for beats. He's got a great ear for actually creating an album, not just a group of singles, but an actual long playing piece of artwork. So he's got a brand new album, Bloodbath and Beyond, out now. You can find that on iTunes. You can stream it on Spotify, Apple Music, all those good things. And he's hitting the road. He'll be in the East Coast in August, hitting up the East Coast. So I'm glad to see his success. And yeah, he was there for me when I just began this show back 5 years ago. So I want to thank Copyright for taking the time out. This is actually our fourth interview together. So I thought, why not ask Copy if he wants to chat about his brand new album, Bloodbath and Beyond. And it is a nice chat. We go all the way back to the beginning, you know, the grassroots origins of his career in the mid-90s, messing around with a crew called Megahertz in Columbus, Ohio, all the way up to his brand new album, which was released about 2 weeks ago. So do check it out. I want to thank everybody for checking out the Andy Dare Show. Next week, we are going to be doing a flashback show. I'm going to be finding rare interviews of myself that I've done on other people's show. And check it out. It'll be at andydare.com. Want to thank everybody who has clicked through the Amazon sponsor, or the Amazon banner. Over at andydare.com, you just click through the banner. It takes you right to Amazon. You spend zero extra dollars, zero extra cents, but you tip your cap to the Andy Dare Show. Over 5 years, we've been doing it independent style. So thanks to everybody who listens, tells a friend, subscribes on iTunes. And yeah, a lot of great guests coming up for this fall. I'm going to keep my lips sealed about that so it doesn't fall through. But yes, we've got an awesome new season of shows coming for you this fall after our little vacation. All right, so without further ado, oh yeah, by the way, that song that I played at the beginning, that was Copyright's brand new banger called OCD ADHD, which I'm sure a lot of people can definitely relate to in 2016. That is a new single off of the new album Bloodbath and Beyond. Check it out now on iTunes. And without further ado, my episode 173, Create Your Own Scene, with special guest Copyright. Thank you so much for checking out the Andy Dare Show. Today we got episode 173, and I'm joined out there in Ohio by Copyright. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How you been?
I've been great. Yeah, and you were one of my first guests back in 2011. This is back when I'm just doing an interview with my flip phone on my couch. And, yeah, it really meant a lot to me that you took the time out. And, yeah, 5 years later, you got a brand new album out called Bloodbath and Beyond. How long have you been working on this thing for?
About 3 years, man.
Damn. Okay, so since the last one, pretty much.
Yeah, like I really didn't have a deadline, and I just kept making songs, and I was making song after song until the songs that I had before that, it would kind of knock them out of the position they were in. So I just kept making songs to see where it would go and to see what I would get. So yeah, I was just going until I felt like I had the right record.
Nice. And this is something a little bit different from you, or for you, because it's not just all punchlines, battle rhymes. A lot of conceptual pieces come in here. Was this something that you felt like a little bit of a step away from what you've normally been doing, or is it just where you're at this time in your life?
I mean, I feel like I've done that before in my career, you know, with like Life and Times and shit. But you know, I also don't see it the way other people see it. You know what I'm saying? I see it from a little different standpoint because I'm the one making it. But I guess it's just a natural progression. It's just where I'm at right now. I didn't set out to do anything specifically, you know, except for like OCD.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that one. OCD, ADHD, that's got like almost a rock beat to it. It sounds almost like Black Keys. That is definitely something new for you. This is a really catchy song. Are you trying to get this one some airplay? Is this going to be a single, or is this just you're messing around with some rock sounds?
Well, to be honest with you, man, it's more, I was trying to write a Beach Boys song.
Really?
I'm a huge Brian Wilson fan, and I was trying to, I had this sample the only way I could throw drums to it was like that weird, you know, boom, dun, dun, because sure. It was so slow. I mean, unless I wanted to go real fast with the drums, but I didn't want to do that. And I wanted to keep it simple. But it's really sample. It's sample based. And then I did the demo of it. And then I had my homeboy Ben Shai go out in Cleveland. He's done like a lot of shit with a lot of real, you know, with MGK and a lot of cats and shit.
Okay.
But like he brought it to life. He played bass live over it. He programmed those drums. They sound live, but I mean, they're programmed, but he just sampled them from his, you know, from him. So he brought a lot out of that record, but I was just trying to make psychedelic rap. Like if you listen to the second hook and the third hook, they've got the wraparound chorus, like the same shit that Brian Wilson and a lot of other people used to do. It's really a lot of, my grandpa sung, you know, in a four part harmony in a barbershop quartet type swing group with Glenn Miller and the Glenn Miller band. So
Skip like, Nelson, right?
That's my dad.
That's really cool.
And my pop's dad. Yeah. So it is cool, man. Because I used to wonder why I like certain types of music, and this is it, I guess.
Hip hop I always loved and was near and dear to my heart was hip hop that was willing to experiment and play around with psychedelia, you know, your 3 feet high and rising, that kind of stuff, where it's just kind of all these genres mashed up. It's not just a beat and a rapper. It's just using your intelligence, using your creativity, and this is something that you're doing on the new thing, right?
If you say so, man. I appreciate it, man, but
You were talking about how you were adding drums to that song. I just saw on your Instagram you're still on your MPC machine.
Yeah, I'm still on the 2000. I've got a couple of the same model.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah,
okay.
I had to kind of upgrade to it's still the same machine. Like, I didn't get the Renaissance or anything, but that's just not what I learned on. So I don't know, man. Like, I don't really have fun. I tried to make a beat once on an ASR-10, and it took a long time to try to get the loop, even to, you know, try to get the sample looped up. And this shit is so fucking easy. The only thing that it doesn't, well, I think you can get time stretch in it, but I don't even know if I'd fuck with time stretch, to be honest. I probably would, but
because it kind of sounds just a little bit off and just a little microsecond off, and it throws the whole thing, makes it sound clumsy or something like that.
Right.
How about like a Dr. Sample? Was that back in the 90s? Were you messing around? Were you beat making back in MHC in the megahertz times, or was this?
Yeah. I was. I've been. Me and Camus started listening for loops at the same exact time and shit. We used to have. We each had a Gemini DJ sampler that you get from, like, you order from, like, you know, from, like, upstairs, from, what was it called, Downstairs Records in Brooklyn. Speaking of De La Soul, like, they mentioned that on Jennifer. Yeah, nice. We had, like, little Gemini things that we ordered from the back of the source and shit, where you just hit the button to start the sample and hit the button to stop the sample. So if you're off, you just got to re-hit it again with your finger and shit.
Yeah, it's tough.
So, yeah, and then, like, after I saved up a little bit of money and shit, and then I copped the 2000. But I had been making beats for a grip. I'm just really picky with everything I do in general. So the beat really has to be something I like a lot. Like, I've done shit in the MHC days. I've done a lot of Chakai shit. I did Three Words off my first album.
Sure.
I did Widespread for Chakai. I did Stage Fright for Chakai. Yeah, man, it's just that I'm really fucking picky. And Camus had the ability to, like, I had so many good producers around me. Like, I had RJ, I had Camus, where I was like, I wasn't really, you know, I was chilling. I was trying to, like, just write to all this great shit that I felt was far better than mine. And Camus just got, they both got good really fast, but Camus was crazy because he could play by ear. Like, he would, all these weird sounds that he would add to shit would be like, the tiniest, like, bullshittiest little sound on its own. You'd be like, that's what that shit is?
Yeah.
He'd, like, loop it up and, like, trick it up and tune it until it sounded like an instrument and shit. He would just fuck with shit and just experiment. He wasn't afraid. He drew, so he wasn't afraid to experiment with sounds and
that's
see
cool.
If something was, you know, because if something's whack, all you do is pretend you didn't do it, you know? Nobody heard it.
Sure. Yeah, we just broke out that S.A. Smash, Smashy Trashy album at the crib, and that, man, that's got a million different crazy sounds, different textures on it, and that's almost all him. I mean, there's a couple other producers, but a lot of him, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
cats. It's like Rock Tight and a few cats on there, but yeah, man, because Moo is just crazy, like, the how am I going to get home shit with the, it's got like a Congo, it's just like a weird-ass sound that he looped up and shit, it's just crazy how his mind would work with shit.
And it's also strange because it was a little bit before its time, because a lot of that S.A. Smash stuff is kind of poppy almost. It's club stuff, which would be hitting, you know, Kanye would be doing that 8 years later, and Camus doesn't really get the, you know, a light flashed on him like he should be as being a talented beatmaker.
Because people can't see it. People can't see it like that, okay? See how what you just said is that you're paying attention to the sound and not like you're listening you're using your ear. Whereas a lot of people, they don't realize that a lot of the shit that Camus was really doing was blow up shit. But they're just used to looking at him in a different light, so they don't see it like that. Now, if he had big ass medallions on and shit,
sure,
and he had like a Bentley, they'd be like, oh, this is bullshit. But, like, they don't use their ears. They just go off what they see and shit. So it's like you got potentially blow-up music, and but because it's presented to you on, from Def Jux and these, you know, and the way the, in the familiarity you have with these cats and what you think their intentions are, it doesn't offend you. But yeah, they had crazy shit, man. Kamu had a lot of shit. Matt's working on some shit right now, so
nice.
You know, he's on Nardwar's cousin, and
sure,
yeah, man, he's just gotten better, man. He's fucking crazy. He's killing it right now.
How about like this? Is it like being from Ohio? Do your friends in New York and L.A. do they look a little bit down on you? Like, why do you want to be coming out of Ohio from? Shouldn't you move to New York? I get that being from the suburbs of Chicago. Like, why don't you want to be downtown Chicago? Why are you living in the suburbs? Right?
Nobody's. I've never heard that before. I heard that. I heard one weird girl who was getting on my nerves say, "Why don't you want to move to New York?" And I'm like, "I've lived in New York." I was like, "I don't like living in New York." I was like, "If I love New York, but I mean, I don't even like living in Ohio. I want to live in California or Hawaii or fucking Florida. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like nice weather all year round. I don't like the cold shit."
Yeah, which we definitely have. Yep.
But you know what though? We also might not get that because when we first came out, we left to New York to get on. You know, we went to New York and Philly and dropped our demo off with at Footworks at Bobbito's store, Bobbito Garcia's store at the time. So we had to leave to get on to some degree. You know what I'm saying? And like we were going on, we moved out there, and then that's when we were making a lot of shit happen and that's when we learned real early, like, it's all about convenience and being at the right place at the right time, because we wouldn't have been in the, if you notice, Tage isn't on a lot of those records because he was in Atlanta, you know, he graduated Morehouse.
Okay.
So he went to school, me and Moody didn't go to school. We were dropouts that never went back and got our shit, right? And
yeah, sure.
And Jakai just really didn't care, never really cared about rap from the jump. Me and him started rapping together, but like, and he can rap his ass off, but he's just like Catalyst, like he just doesn't care about it. Just because he's good at it, you know what I'm saying? Like, just because you're good at it doesn't mean you necessarily have to care about doing it. But I don't know, man. Like, me and Moo were out in New York, so, like, we were in a bunch of opportunities, so we were just trying to utilize everything that we could do. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, with the best intentions. Not, like, just to, like, you know, get over and shit, but we were out there like, damn. We were, if somebody was like, "You want to get on this record?" We weren't like, what type of... like that, like if it's our homies, you know, we would really
networking.
Just make music. Yeah, well, I mean, we were actual friends. Like, we were all hanging out and shit.
Nice.
You know, like when in the early days of the Weathermen, we all actually hung out. It wasn't just like, I mean, if anything, we hung out a lot and never made any music. You know what I'm saying?
It was more like, just hanging out, yeah.
It was more a legitimate friendship thing. Yeah, for real. I mean, we all had a common interest and a common ground that we all made music. But, you know, I think the cool thing about
like starting in your own space, a little bit away from everything that's going on, can definitely nurture your own personality as a musician. Like, I recently visited Aberdeen, Washington. That's where Cobain grew up. And
of course.
He had nothing else to do except for work on his guitar. There was nothing else going on. Like, if he was from Seattle, maybe we wouldn't have Nirvana. We wouldn't have the sounds that he created. But he was in this little podunk little, farming town, and that's all he had to do. So, yeah, I wanted to bring it back, though. Was Fondalim like the label that you first started working with back in, what, 96, 7, 8?
That was 98.
Nice.
With Fondalim. Yeah, we did two singles on Fondalim as Megahertz. And then we
World
did
premiere?
Something with ABB. What's up?
Was that World Premiere or was that just you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was World Premiere, and World Premiere was the A side. The song Kamu was the B side. It was just a solo Kamu song.
Nice.
And then the second joint on Fondalim was Rocket Science. And what else was on that? Magnetics, and which is another solo Kamu song, and shit, what's on there, man?
Which would all be grabbed together for the album in 01, right? The compilation?
Even though it wasn't a real album, yeah. That was just like a bunch of shit we threw on a CD to sell. Basically.
Sure, yeah. I was going to ask, did Bobbito had his own show, right? So you go on and you'd freestyle, right? Or...
yeah, but that was after, that was like when we first, that was like the second time we went to New York. Cause like in the beginning, we were just on some like, please listen to our demo shit. Like we had our Nelson Morales, our homeboy who was managing us at the time, contact, you know, contact Bobito and shit, and he was like, just bring it out. So it wasn't an email it to me or like a mail it to me, or maybe that was optional, but our manager wanted to drive us out there. So we did that, and it just worked out. Like, we didn't even hear from Bobito till like a month after he played it, and he told us he played it on the radio. But like, yeah.
You made an impression.
It's just random yeah, it's just random shit, man. Like, and at the time we looked at it, I mean, it's just random. Everybody's story is different, and it's like, if you love doing this, you'll keep going and going, and eventually you'll do something, because like, you're doing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, sure. When you stop, people stop because they don't love it, and they're waiting on a return on their investment too early. Like, you
sure.
know.
Yeah, you got to keep going at it. And, like, it's weird because there was a golden age in hip-hop, you know, late 80s, 87 to through 90. And then I feel like there was another golden age, which was 98 to 2000, where you had Soundbomb, you had the Ruckus Records, Def Jux, Eastern Conference, Rhymesayers, all this stuff. And was that just a really cool period? I mean, I guess it was before social media and stuff. And it was before the MP3 and Apple Music and streaming and all that stuff. Was that a cool part that you're part of it still? I mean, was that a cool memory?
No, it actually really was, because it was it wasn't as saturated as it is now, and it was also like these cats that are like giants now, like L and like Slug and just cats like that are like, you know, so solidified now. And even Doom, like when Doom came back, he returned from, you know, his KMD story and shit. Like,
oh, sure.
He came back as Doom in 97, either 98 or 97. 'Cause it was right when we were like, you know, getting our shit to, you know, sure. ready to drop on Fondalum. So we were just excited. 'Cause I had Mr. Hood on cassette when I was in.
Hell yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Black,
like,
Bastards. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a great record.
So.
But, like, all these things, it wasn't really a competitive thing. I mean, it's kind of funny because, like, a couple years before, you had this East Coast, West Coast actual gang violence going on between the coasts. And then the late 90s, it was kind of like a more chilled out, everybody has their own label going on and their own scene, but it seemed like there wasn't a lot of anger between camps. Like, Rhymesayers didn't hate Eastern Conference, you know, Def Jux didn't hate Ruckus, all this stuff was going on. And a lot of it had, you even had major label backing on some of those like indie labels, which was something that would be nearly impossible nowadays, right?
Yeah, Ruckus was owned by Rupert Murdoch, who owned Fox and shit. So yeah, that was just a write off for him. Yeah.
But those sound bombings, those were pretty classic. And it's definitely a different time in hip hop. You got to make your own niche. You got to definitely hit the road. I've seen you've been playing a bunch of shows. You did the whole Dead Ringer with RJD2. You came out for June, right?
Yeah. That was dope. Yeah, shout out to RJ. Blueprint.
Yeah, Blueprint 2.
Shout out RSG, too, man. I got to shout out my squad, Ready, Set, Go. Shout out BGATS, Metro, Ja'Kai, you know.
Hell yeah, nice.
Dom, Beat Effect. I'm still, you know, that's still my squad. Even if they don't want to rap on every single thing. So.
Nice. And who's the label that's putting this new one out, Bloodbath and Beyond?
That's a dude by the name of Cool V's label, Public School Records.
Public School, nice.
Yeah. They've got a. So they got this situation, and they're going through
Hitting up a lot of festivals this summer.
I'm high right now.
It's all good. Yeah. And hitting up a bunch of fests and shows. This will be out this Saturday. What's coming up live show wise you can plug?
Oh man, I'm actually about to go on tour. About to do an East Coast tour, and I'm leaving on the 3rd or the 4th of August. It starts in Ohio, and then we make our way up to New York and just bounce around and shit.
That's
so
cool.
That's going on, and then I'm going back overseas in November, but I got to keep some of that under wraps. But
that's
yeah,
cool.
Man,
pretty awesome. If you want to check out more about copyright 614 on Twitter, 614.
Yeah, but my shit got hacked, bro, so I don't really have a lot of
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. I had to start from scratch on that. But follow me on Instagram, copyright underscore, or hit me up on Facebook, cool. Copyright, or just Pete Nelson, and you'll see copyright in parentheses. Shout out to everybody listening. Shout out to everybody who bought the record, Bloodbath and Beyond. Thank you. I appreciate it. Andy, I appreciate you, man. Thank you, my brother.
Totally appreciate you. And, yes, thanks for calling in once again. You have a great rest of the year. And, check out Bloodbath and Beyond. Out now. Check it out. And on behalf of Copyright, this is Andy signing off for the Andy Derer Show. This episode of the Andy Derer Show is brought to you in part by Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue in Westmont, Illinois. Family-owned and operated since 1997, Uncle Bub's is the real deal barbecue. A family-friendly restaurant open 7 days a week. Also, it's a full-service catering company doing weddings, pig roasts, luaus, grill packages, you name it. They have a friendly, helpful staff that will make sure that your party goes off without a hitch. Call them at 630-493-9000. Visit them at 132 South Cass Avenue in Westmont, Illinois, and UncleBubs.com.
Hey man, I know you like grilling. I know you like getting those dark grill marks on your burgers, fish, chicken. And I know you don't want to just dry your meat out like you're cooking with a hairdryer. Why not get the Man Grate and click through the AndyDareShow.com's banner so we can keep the lights on here at Honeycomb Hideout Studios in gorgeous Westmont, Illinois. The Man Grate. This episode of the Andy Derer Show is brought to you in part by Record Utopia, a music lover's dream with thousands of vinyl records, musical instruments, and sound gear. They buy, sell, and trade. Give them a call at 630-963-1957. Visit them in Westmont, Illinois at 309 West Ogden Avenue, on the web at recordutopia.com. It's always a good, relaxed atmosphere. Check them out, Record Utopia.
This has been a presentation of the Andy Derer Show and Derer Network. Copyright 2016. All rights reserved. Thank you so much for listening, and please do check out AndyDerer.com for more info.